group on our website to listen to recordings. At this time, we ask that you silence your cell phones and power down your devices so we don't distract others during the meeting. And will you please help me give a warm welcome to Dan from the Larchmont 12 and 12.
I really want to bang his gavel, but I'm not going to do it. It just looks very tempting to sit there. Hey, my name's Dan. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you all for having me out here to speak tonight. I appreciate it. My sobriety date is May 1st, 2016, and I do have a home group, as Steve mentioned. It's Larchmont 12 and 12. We meet, if you're interested, we meet Monday nights at 8 p.m., and it's at the Larchmont United Methodist Church, and that's in Norfolk on Jamestown Crescent. So if you're ever in that area or want a different meeting, come check us out. It's we have a good time. Most of the time we read the 12 and 12, and then I think once a month we read the big book. So it's a little bit. I think it was just too long to have Larchmont 12 and 12 and big book, and it keeps getting, after a while it gets too long. So had to cut that off a little bit. But and I do have a sponsor. Funny enough, my sponsor is the one who's asked me, could I speak tonight? Because the original speaker we had from our home group is feeling a little under the weather. And so I got a missed call from my sponsor at work, and I'm on my break, and what's going on? And I was like, calling back, and he's like, hey, can you speak tonight? And I was already planning on coming out here to, support our home group member. And so I was like, oh, sure, I'll do it. Because, that just goes with what he taught me, which is, if someone asks me to do something in AA, I say yes, and if I don't, I better have a darn good reason that I'm saying no, and I usually don't. 9 times out of 10, I don't. So here I am, and so the way I've, been shown how to do this. And by the way, I also my sponsor and I've been through the 12 steps, and I also take others through the 12 steps out of the big book and sponsor others whenever I have the opportunity to do that. And that's about it for the introductory stuff, I think. Hopefully I didn't leave anything out. If I did, just come let me know afterward, and I'll correct that. But what was I going to say next? So the way I've always been shown an example of how to do it is just to share what it was like when I started drinking, or maybe a little bit before that, but mostly when I started drinking, and then what led up to me coming in here. Like, how did I end up in AA, and what happened, and then what my life's like today, and that involves going through the whole process of how did I get sober. So that's just what I'm gonna share a little bit with you all about tonight. And so I'll start off with that. I know a lot of people, I know that a lot of my friends in the program have told me about being unfamiliar sort of with AA and what goes on in meetings and stuff prior to coming in. So that wasn't actually my experience, because my dad is also sober and he's been in AA a long time. Actually, since I was very young, I think maybe 3 or 4 years old, he's got about 30 years or so now. And so I don't remember ever seeing him drink. I was more familiar with Alcoholics Anonymous than alcohol, funny enough. Because we didn't have it in the house, right? Like, my dad doesn't drink. My mom, I've seen her drink a third of a beer. And I remember the specific amount. That's how you can tell there's like something wrong where I'm keeping track of who's drinking what, even if it's not me. And it's like, oh, she had a third of it. So I can remember how much was left in the bottle. I don't remember what kind it was, but I do remember where it was. It was at the King George House of Pizza. And I don't think it's there anymore, actually. I think that's now gone, actually. But, and it was only because my grandpa kind of was like, oh, hey, have a beer with me. He wanted his daughter to have a beer, and she had a third. I remember even thinking then, this is before I ever started drinking, I was like, well, that's weird. Why didn't she finish it? I was like, kind of wondering about that. Because I didn't know anything about, I knew my dad didn't drink, so I was like, well, it must be bad, right? It must be real, pretty bad for my, obviously he had to quit. My mom doesn't want anything to do with it, really. But I would see stuff like, on Christmas, my uncles would be drinking a little bit, and they weren't it's not for me to say the room. They weren't drinking excessively around me, I'll just say that. They were having maybe a couple of beers or whatever. They were seemed to be behaving like normal drinkers, at least around the public company of the rest of my family. And I don't know what else was going on, but I never saw too much of that. But I did end up, my dad would take me to some AA meetings when I was pretty young. And I remember going as a kid and did not really, I don't remember what was going on, but I just remember it was a bunch of people kind of like this and there was coffee. I don't remember there being candy because I feel like I would have gone straight for the candy and probably ate a lot of it. So I don't know if there was any candy at the meetings I was at, but there might have been, I don't know. And then at a certain point in high school, my dad actually got me to start going to Alateen. And the way he did that, he was like, well, I'll go take you to Cold Stone after. And I loved Cold Stone. I loved ice cream. I had a real sweet tooth. And this is before I started drinking, but I was already kind of well on my way to the sugar sort of fix or addiction, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. So I'm sure some can relate to. So I would say, I'll be like, all right, fine, I'll go sit there for an hour. I had trouble relating in there because I felt kind of weird being in there. Now, I don't know if guilty is the right word, but I was like, well, my dad's sober. And like people were in there sharing about their parents or their family members and they were still active alcoholics. And I was like a little bit uncomfortable because I was like, I don't know what to say. Like my dad doesn't drink. I'm not saying he's perfect, but I didn't have those particular issues that were being talked about. So I just kind of just sat there. It's funny, I recently reconnected with somebody that knew, like, we went to this Alateen at the same time, and now we're both in AA together, and he's doing really well, too, actually, and I'm happy that he kind of reminded me about that, and he was like, yeah, man. I was like, yeah, you know what, I do remember, I was like, well, you didn't have the beard then, but, you know, I do remember him being there, so that's pretty cool, and I now realize my dad was kind of trying to hedge his bets, maybe, just in case, and maybe he was seeing some things and he was like, well, I better, you know, get him used to at least the idea of sitting around and talking about some of this stuff at the very least. Because the reason he did that was, and I'll get to where I start drinking pretty soon here, but the reason he did that was because in high school or even before that, I had a lot of anger issues. And I know a lot of teenagers do and things like that. But I was to the point where one time I punched through a window because my brother was doing something stupid outside. And I just punched right through this window. And my mom was like, I didn't even cut my arm or anything, surprisingly. Nothing really bad happened. But I remember mom was like, why are you doing that? Why? What? Like, what are you thinking? And I was like, I have no idea. It was like, took over and just, you know, punched through this glass. And I had no idea why I did that. And it's the same idea of like in the Big Book where it says like people are like, why can't you stop? Or why'd you pick up again? Or is it like, you know, I don't know. You know, I have no answer for that. And it was sort of the same idea with that. I had no idea why I was doing that stuff. And so my parents would, you know, send me to counselors and things like that. And that was when my dad thought it was a good idea for me to go to Alateen, coincidentally or maybe not. But I had a lot of these emotional things going on and the anger and would rage up out of control, but I never really experimented with drinking yet. Just because I wasn't really around it, like I said, it wasn't in my house. I didn't really have a lot of friends I had friends who went to parties, but they weren't like always getting me to go with them, or they didn't have a way to get their own stuff, like they didn't have a fake ID or anything that I knew of, or if they did, they didn't tell me about it. But then my senior year of high school, my senior year of high school, they're like, hey, we're all getting together, we're getting this hotel room at the oceanfront for after prom, and, you know, you give us $20 or whatever, we're gonna, my friend's boyfriend was gonna buy us all alcohol, liquor, bottles of liquor to have it there at the hotel room, and I was like, all right, that sounds great, you know, I was like, oh, this will be great, so I chip in my money. And then after prom, by the way, I broke my big toe before prom. That's not alcohol related, so if you want to come see me after the meet, I'll tell you the whole story of how I broke my big toe. But anyway, I'm going to this hotel room, and I'm on crutches after prom. I'm in this, you know, Velcro shoe, and I'm going down to the hotel room. I'm like, all right, you know, I got to get here and get this, you know, this liquor that I paid for, right? And I'm like, this is going to be my first drink ever. And so I get up there, and then I go in the room, and then my friends weren't there yet, or they were in another room or something. I saw my friend's boyfriend, who I didn't really know that well, and he had his back turned to me, so he didn't see me. And I saw the liquor bottles lined up on the counter. I had a very strange reaction. I hightailed it out of there. I was like scared by it. It was like something in me was like the fight or flight kicked in, and I was like, I gotta go. I'm like, I gotta get out of here. And I was like, you know, all these crap. And I was, and my friends were all like, where'd you go? What happened? Like, where did she want that? No, I was like, no, I can't. Like, I gotta get it. They didn't see me till like they were texting me on my phone and stuff, asking where was I? Did I want this? And I was like, no, that's you. You know, it's okay. You all have a good time. And so I went back home and I didn't drink that night. But then the night of my high school graduation, I did end up drinking. And I was in a situation where I was with some of my friends, and we went to my friend's house and the party, and my first drink ever was a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It was supposed to be that liquor, whatever they had there, and I got, you know, I hightailed it out of there, so it ended up being Mike's Hard Lemonade. And I didn't know what it was when I first picked it up. I was like, oh, what's this, you know, and then, but something happened, and I was like, oh, I got to get some more of this, you know, like right away. I was like, nah. And it wasn't like, oh, I'd like to. I was like, no, I got to get some more of this now, like right now. And I was like, where's the rest of it? You know, where's the bottle? Where's the whiskey? Where's the, you know, I wanted it. Because all of a sudden it was like, oh, everything's good. I don't care. You know, everything's fine. That was what I'd been looking for. I wanted something to have that would make me, you know, okay, and like not care about stuff, you know, not care. Because I felt like when I was sober, I care way too much about every single little thing in the entire world and every person and what they're thinking about me and all this other stuff. And then when I took that drink, I was like, oh, I was like, all right, let's have a good time, you know. And but I couldn't, like, I didn't want to stop there. I was like, well, if, you know, and this wasn't really conscious, this is just me going with it. I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be like, I got to get more, because more is going to be even better, right? That's my alcoholic mind already working. And so the night ends with my friend getting taken to the hospital for alcohol poisoning. I didn't get taken to the hospital. I was very drunk. Don't get me wrong. But they put me to bed and they were like, well, lay on your side. Just like, if you throw up, you know, and choke on it. And even then, it was, you know, I was that drunk that they had to sort of like, you know, and I was in and out. I don't remember everything that happened. I wouldn't call it a blackout because I do remember some of it, but it was definitely in and out for a lot of it. And then the next day we were having this family trip to celebrate my graduation, and I'm just hungover completely. And I'm throwing up out of the side of the minivan, and then my mom's like, what? You know, she's very upset. My dad was just kind of like, I don't think he really, he might have been known the day was coming eventually, so I don't think he was too surprised, but my mom was very, very upset. So I don't think she wanted me to ever touch alcohol. But regardless of that, so then, you know, I get in a ton of trouble, but I'm just like, I can't wait to do that again. You know, I didn't care about how much trouble I got in. I was like, that's the answer right there, you know? And I was like, I gotta get back to that. I gotta get some more. And I also thought that instead of making sure my friend was okay who got taken to the hospital, I was like, oh, well, that means I'm not that bad, right? I'm already comparing myself. I'm like, oh, I didn't get taken to the hospital. I didn't get alcohol poisoning. I'm good. You know, I'm a good drinker. You know, I'm a successful drinker. That was not true. That would not, looking back at it now, I would not say it was successful. But at the time, I was like comparing myself in or out or whatever to like, well, I'm okay. You know, I can keep going. Already, it's my first night of drink. I'm already doing this stuff. And so let's see where I'm at here. All right, we're gonna fast forward a little bit here, because basically my college years were when I did most of my drinking, and I started off at one college, and I didn't even last like a full semester. I don't even think I was there for a month, and I had to come back home. Now you might think this is because of drinking. It actually wasn't. It was because of all my other anger and emotional issues and all the other stuff I had going on. And because, in part, I was being rather lazy and not showing up for classes and not doing the things that you're supposed to do to stay enrolled in college. not due to drinking, well, not for lack of trying. I just couldn't find where the alcohol was at in this place. It wasn't what I would say was a huge party school. There was parties there, but I was like, where are y'all hiding it? You know, I was like looking around for, you know, and maybe they knew, you know, they knew I was, I don't know what they knew or didn't know, but I couldn't find it there. And maybe that was, you know, maybe if I had found it, I would have done better. Who knows? But probably not. Actually, definitely not. Actually, I probably would have ended up out of there sooner than I did, to be honest. So if I played the tape through with that, but in any case, I had to come back home, and then I ended up going to ODU. And I liked it at ODU so much that I was there, I think, for on and off for 7 or 8 years. And I didn't graduate from there until I finally got sober. I was there drunk on and off for a long time and then couldn't get my act together. And I'm amazed they never, like, completely pushed me out of there. They always, like, kind of let me hang around and I could be on the probation or whatever, but they never actually, like, expelled me or anything. I was always kind of like on the fringe, even when I was like had to take a semester off or whatever. But at a certain point, my drinking and my escapades and my wanting to party all the time, and because I'd settled down for a little bit, right? I started going to classes. I was like, all right, I got to get this. This is too much pressure. I got to at least do a little bit so I can, so my parents will ease up on me, because this time they're, you know, like I said, they don't want me to be messing with this stuff. It's like my dad went through a lot and before he got sober, and he didn't want me going, and then my mom's even more so, because she had to deal with my dad for, usually was drinking. She's like, oh no, here we go again, you know? And so of course she doesn't want me to be messing around with it. And so I behave myself for a little while and I get my act. This is the thing, is like, I'm trying to remember what it says in the Big Book about like doing good for a little while and then bringing it all crashing down upon my head. And that's pretty much what I would do every time. It was like, I would maintain for a little bit and then I would just pull the whole structure down and destroy everything just by picking up a drink. Except with me, it's picking up a drink, but then there's many more that usually follow that. It's never just, you know, one. It's never just like one and done, right? Like, I don't think that ever happened. It was at least, and I would be like, well, this one time I only had 2 beers, right? And it was like, yeah, but you were thinking of, like, even then I was thinking about more. And it was just the fact that I was around other people. Like, I was afraid. In that instance, my fear of being judged overruled my desire to get blackout drunk in that one instance. And that was pretty early on in my drinking. And that was a very rare occasion. That usually didn't happen. It was usually the opposite. It was like, I'll get rid of this fear by drinking. And so about a certain point, I do okay. And I'm like, I'm in school, I'm doing okay. And then I'm like, but then I find some people who like to drink like I do. And I start going over, hanging out with them all the time. And, you know, I crash at their place and I'm drinking and I'm having a good time. But I'm doing stuff that's like, I'm being, like, even when I'm drinking, you know, I'll get this feeling, I'll be sitting there, and I'll feel all alone, and I'll be like, what's this about? It's like, this isn't supposed to happen. I'm sitting there, I'm at this party in front, I'm like, man, I'm all alone. I'm like, what? It's like, this isn't supposed to happen. That's not what it's supposed to be about. So, and then I'll just kind of like, oh, I'll just keep drinking, you know, that'll fix it. But I remember this stuff happening, and then other times I would have this rage that sort of overcame me. My younger years would come back when I was drunk, and I would start throwing bottles, doing all sorts of crazy stuff, because I got mad that people drank my beer, my liquor, or whatever, even though I would do the same to them. I would be mad if someone did it for me, because I'd be like, no, that's mine, you know, I need that. Like, you want it, but I need it. I would get enraged by that. Even if it was me that had drank it and I'd forgot, and then I just tried to blame somebody else and say, oh, it's your, no, you did it. I'm like, no, you just had 8 beers. You don't remember. I was like, no, I don't remember, but I know that it was you that drank the 9th one or whatever the case might be. And so stuff like that. And so stuff like this starts to happen. I don't think anything of it at the time. I'm like, right. I'm like, oh, this is just part of the deal. I don't talk to anybody about it. 'Cause I'm like, no, it's just how everybody's, you know, so everybody acts, so everybody, you know, lives life and manages life, and nothing weird about it. I was like, my family's weird because they're the ones that don't understand it. It's like, my friends understand, you know, they get it. They know what it's about. But then certain friends started to not want to hang out with me anymore and make excuses for why I can't come over and like, oh, we're studying. And in the background, I'm hearing stuff. I'm like, you're not getting ready for a party and I'm not invited. And I'm like, why is that? Maybe it's because they had had enough of my drinking and all this stuff that was going on. And they said, well, maybe Dan doesn't need to come to this one. But in any case, so I start partying. Then I stop going to class again. I don't go to class and I'm just out drinking and partying. And so what happens when you do that, right? Your grades start to dip, right? And I'm failing out of all these classes. And instead of being honest about it, I figure, well, I know how to fix this. I'll go and I'll make a little copy of the web page that has my grades on it, and I'll just go change a few little letters in there. And I figured out how to do that to show my parents. I'm like, hey, look, I thought I was being suspicious for all straight A's, but I think I sprinkled a couple B's in there, A minuses, but I was like, oh, look at that, you know, here's my grades, here, you know, and they're like, oh, good job. Didn't think twice about it, right? They trusted me and I wasn't showing them something falsified, which in fact I was, so I could continue to drink. But eventually this catches up to me, right? And I'm like, oh man, I'm in trouble. They're sending me these notices. I'm gonna get kicked out of school. And so I tell my friend about all this, and meanwhile I'm sitting there drinking, you know, the whole time. And she's like, hey, you know, there's people at the college that help you out with this. Like, you go to such and such office and tell them, and they'll assist you with whatever it is, and they'll help you find a solution, you know. And I'm like, No, I don't think that's going to work. You know, I didn't want to do that because then I wouldn't have to be honest about it. And I didn't want to do that. And I was like, I think I'll just keep. So then I wind up at this other place getting drunk with this other guy who, I guess he was my friend, but he also left me there. And I don't know what happened there, but I ended up trying to walk home. And it's not that far. This place is right outside my neighborhood. And I can't make it home. I don't even make it a block. I end up laying on someone's lawn, stargazing, and then, or whatever I said I was doing. And then they come out and they're like, hey, get off my lawn, you're drunk. Like, go away. And I think maybe I couldn't actually get up. I don't know. But anyway, I start saying, well, I'm not going to go and whatever. And I was so drunk I couldn't talk straight. Like, I was, not that just I was slurring, like, I was incomprehensible, because then the cops came and they said, they couldn't understand what I was saying either. and that's what they told the judge. And I'm like, yeah, you're probably, you know, I wasn't going to argue about that one. Because I was like, yeah, it's probably, I don't remember all of what took place. But I end up going to the drunk tank. And they locked me up in there. And I'll tell you, I'd never had anything like that happen before. I'd never been in any sort of trouble to where I got put somewhere where I couldn't leave. And there was guards. And that was pretty scary, and it was all due to me being drunk and not knowing when to stop, because at that point I'd been drinking since like all day pretty much, trying to, because of this impending situation I had with school. And I just, that was the only solution I knew how to do, was to drink. And that's what ended up putting me in here as a member of AA, not just as, you know, I'm coming with my dad and I'm younger. It's like, no, now I got to show up to the meetings, because, I'll tell you, I got out the next day, and then my dad came and picked me up from jail, and that was one of the most uncomfortable car rides I've ever had in my life, was with someone who's in recovery, my dad, who's also my dad. And it's like, and then by the way, I was like, well, it can't get any worse than this right now. So I told him about the whole grade, faking the grades thing, because I was like, I'm in deep trouble already, so let's just let it all out at this point. So what do I have to lose? And he wasn't too happy about that either, to say the least. But it was more like, he wasn't like yelling or screaming or anything. It was just like so quiet. And I was like, I would have rather that he yelled at me, because I was like, I don't know what to do about this. And so then we went to a meeting, so I could tell the judge the next day, because I had to go to my court date. And by the way, it was a drunk in public. I got a misdemeanor. They ended up charging me with, which could have been worse, but at the same time I was like, well, my only moral that I took from it was that I needed to be more careful about not walking and instead driving, because I hadn't gotten a DUI yet. So my answer was like, well, it's because I was walking. Like, that's for, you know, I'll just drive next time. And I was like, I was just trying to be responsible. and not drive. And that's what got me into trouble. So forget that. I'll just do, you know, that was my, that's my thinking, right? That's my best thinking that ends me up in here is stuff like that. Thinking that that's a good answer to my problem rather than maybe ask for some help, maybe ask for some people to help me in here. Because I'll tell you what, when I showed up to AA, I'm, no matter what I told the judge, because the judge told my, heard my story of how I was drunk I was on a Tuesday. And by the way, the cops also asked me why I was that drunk on a Tuesday. And I was like, well, first of all, I didn't know it was Tuesday. And what do you mean? Like, it's a, like, I don't understand what, why that should affect when I'm, how much I'm drinking, what day it is. You know, don't you know I'm in college and this is what we're supposed to do? And so the judge heard my whole story. The cop got up there and told him about all of what I was up to and running around in the street, the whole nine yards. And he said, yeah, you're going to go to 90 AA meetings. And you're going to come back, and he's like, and you're going to get them all signed off. And he's like, then we'll talk about maybe dismissing this charge. And he's like, because I think he heard enough of my story to know. And he was like, this guy's probably an alcoholic. I know where to send him. I was like, oh. And once I got in here, I kept telling everybody, like, you got a DUI, right? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I got drunk in public. And they're like, you got to go to 90 meetings? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, that's a lot. I was like, I know. That's what I tried to tell him. He didn't listen. But I think something in there probably, or maybe several things that he heard, probably was like, this guy could benefit from some extra meetings. And my deviousness had kind of like, not disappeared, but to where I was a little bit scared and I wasn't willing to take the chance of like falsifying signatures and stuff like that. Cause that had already gotten me in some trouble. So I was like, all right, I got to go to these meetings. And I didn't want to be here. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. Even after all that had happened, that had led up to that, I was still like, nope, I just need to figure this out and I can figure out what to do. Cause I wasn't ready to let go of alcohol. I was like, this is all I know. You know, I didn't know any other way to deal with life at that point. But I had, no, I didn't have any willingness. Not yet. I didn't, but I showed up in here anyway, and some people tried to help me. And I remember I was one time I was at the young people's meeting, downtown Young and Sober. And then the girl was chairing the meeting came up afterwards. She's like, hey, she's like, I know you're, she's like, I can see you're not doing too well. And I was like, oh, I'm okay. I wasn't okay. I'd gotten kicked out of the house because I, even my parents' house, because I still, even after getting arrested and all this stuff, I continued to drink and they found out. And I was lying. I would say, oh, I'm going to go to the AA meeting. And I figured that could buy me 2 to 3 hour window of going out drinking. But I would overshoot it because I'm an alcoholic. Once I start, I'm just going to keep going. And so I would, and then they'd be like, well, the AA meeting didn't last till 1 a.m. You know, Daniel. They call me Daniel, not Dan. My family calls me Daniel. So they're like, Daniel, but Amy. And I would come in drunk, and I wasn't good at hiding it either, regardless of what I might tell you or other people. I wasn't. I was not. I might think I was, but I wasn't. And they'd catch on to me, and they'd be like, so I had to leave. I had to go live somewhere else to where I was living somewhere. I didn't have any curtains on the window. I had a towel on one window and nothing on the other. There was ants everywhere. All I had was like a mini fridge and a mattress. And typical, you know, life situation, so I thought. And I was like, oh, this is fine, you know. Even then, I wasn't willing to admit that alcohol might be a problem. Meanwhile, I'm still having to go to these meetings. And then, oh, back to what I was saying about the girl came up and she was like, yeah, there's lots of people who help you. She's like, you can go talk to that guy. Oh, I'll help you. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks. And then not even an hour later, I was sitting there drinking. You know, I was drinking margaritas or whatever it was. No, it was margaritas, actually. I remember that. Because I remember she came up and she tried to let me know. And I was like, basically like, okay, sure. Like, I straight up lied to her face because I didn't want help at that time. I just wanted to continue to do things my way. And but I do remember this one guy, and I did get him to start taking me out to this meeting in Virginia Beach and driving me out there. Because I didn't own my own car, and my parents had taken away the car that they let me drive because I would drive drunk in it. So they said, no, you're not going to drive anymore. So I had to get this guy who was giving me rides to meetings. And I was like, well, look, man. I was like, I don't drink a fifth of vodka, a handle, or Jack Daniel's or whatever every morning. And I was like, I just can't relate to that. I was like, that's just not me. And he's like, He's like, yeah, man. He's like, I didn't do that either. He's like, but whenever I picked up a drink, it was like playing Russian roulette, and I didn't know if there was a bullet in the chamber or not. And I was like, whoa. It's like, I never thought about it like that before. Mm-hmm. And I love to tell you that that's the moment I got sober and never took another drink, but that's not true. But I do remember him telling me that, and this was like 9-10 years ago now. Because I came into AA 2 years. I was in and out for 2 years before I had the time that I have now. And this was during those 2 years of bouncing in and out of meetings. And I had, I think, 4 sponsors during that time. One of them was the same guy twice. And they all were doing the same thing with me. They all start reading the big book with me, saying, hey, let's sit down, let's read the book. And I was like, all right. You know, because each time I was in enough pain there, I was at least willing to ask somebody for help, even if I wasn't going to do everything they told me. I remember one time one of my sponsors and me were actually, funny enough, we were at a speaker meeting, not this one, a different one out in Chesapeake, and I was sitting there on my phone or something after the meeting. He was like, well, hey, Dan, he's like, don't you think it might be nice to help some of the clean up or pick up some chairs after the meeting or whatever? And I was like, I got so offended at him. I got a resentment against him. I was like, how dare you tell me that? Like, you don't tell me what to do, right? And that's like, well, he's my sponsor. He's kind of supposed to, like, give me some sort of direction. But I didn't like any of that. I didn't want anyone to tell me what to do. And I just was like, no, that's it. And then I just was like, I can't deal with you, man. And it was like simplest thing. It's like I could have picked up a few chairs and that would have been that and done a little search. I wasn't even willing to do that much. Until it gets bad enough, right? Until I get to the point where I want to stop and I just can't. And I'll show up in a meeting and I'll drag myself there and I'll be like, you know, and I just know in the back of my head, I was like, I can't do it on my own. And then, so I started working with this guy again, and then he actually skipped town and didn't tell me he was leaving, but I could have found another sponsor, right? Like, there's plenty of people out there. Instead of doing that, I figured it was easier and I was like, well, forget it. I'll just go drink again. And so that led up to my last night of drinking, which was a situation where I had conned my way into getting a job shucking oysters and saying that I was an expert at it, even though I had never done it before in my entire life. And I was at this party of these people in the Navy people, and they were like, oh, this guy's the greatest oyster shucker. I don't know how I didn't cut my hand open. I mean, I had the glove and everything, but still, I was like shucking these oysters. And I was drinking, and they had these like little kegs of craft beer, and I was like, oh, they're bringing me beer for shucking these oysters. Actually, very dangerous. And I think about it, I don't know what could have happened. That's part of the reason I know stuff like that is how I know there's a higher power, because that's looking out for me somehow, because if there wasn't anything, I would have definitely like stab myself through the hand or something at the very least with what I was doing. But and then I was like, oh, I gotta go to my friend's birthday party, so I'm already drunk as could be, right? And I drive over to my friend's birthday party, and I'm like, oh, there's a guy here buying free shots. This is amazing. How could this night get any better? Well, the night ends with me trying to fight my friend. I didn't know this till after he told me I had to make amends to him for it. Trying to fight my friend for offering me a ride home because of how drunk I was. And I tried to actually threaten him with physical violence because he was trying to give me a ride home. And the night ended with me embarrassing myself in numerous ways. And then just being all alone in the section that was for the birthday party. And everyone else was gone. And I'm still there. And I'm still drinking. I'm still continuing to drink. And then the next thing I know, I wake up and I'm out on the curb and my truck's sitting there and I'm like, what happened? And I'm about to get a DUI. And the cop is like, look, man, you got to call a taxi. And I was too drunk to call a taxi. You call one for me. And then the other cop was like, hey, if I was in charge, you'd be going to jail right now, man. And I was like, I wanted to say I'm glad you're not in charge, but I didn't think I should be a smart aleck. So I was like, yeah, you know, thanks. And then and I was like, yeah, you know, I used to go to AA. I don't know why I was told the cops, I guess because how drunk I was. And they were like, yeah, you better go back. You're like, you need to go back, dude. I'm like, you're in bad shape. And I was like, oh, you think so? And I was like, having this is the most like strange experience, because I remember this, and I don't remember a lot of that night, but I remember talking to these cops and telling them like, yeah, I go. And then I told them I knew somebody that they worked with, and they were like, oh yeah, man, we'll tell them all about you. And I was like, oh, I shouldn't have brought him up. But anyway, then I was getting ready to go back and pick up my truck again after I got home. And instead of that, I found my, this was what I consider a spiritual experience. Rather than, I had to make amends to my friend because I called him to come pick me up so I could go back. And I kind of ditched him and ended up back at my parents' house. And I called this guy 3 a.m, right? He's at Jazz Fest in New Orleans, so he picks up the phone. And I have no idea what I said to him. But he started sponsoring me. Start going through the 12 steps. Because he knew I needed help. I mean, whatever I said or didn't say to him that night, I don't really remember. And it doesn't really matter, because what he knew was that I needed some help and I was finally willing to do something, right? I was like at the point of, I was desperate enough and enough pain that I was willing to do just about anything he suggested. And he didn't tell me to do anything too out of the ordinary. He was just like, all right, look, you know, how many times do you want to meet up a week? And I was like, well, I still had a job somehow, but I was like, well. And operating power tools, no less, and I did show up to that job drunk before. And I tried to get out of it. My mom dragged me out of bed one day to go to job. And I was like, no, I'm too intoxicated. I can't handle the tools. And she was like, that is not a good excuse. You go to work and do whatever they tell you to do. But me and him just started meeting up, and I was like, look, man, I was like, I'm here to do whatever it is I got to do, you know, and so I think we're probably 2-3 times a week, but this is an addition. I was going to a meeting just about every day, so every day that I could make it where I didn't have, like, work that kept me from making it, so it was at least 6 or 7 a week, because I knew, I was like, I didn't even want to miss one day. Like, I would be scared if I missed one day because I was, you know, working, I had some crazy hours with this other catering job, but I was like, I didn't want to. I would try and go to a meeting in the morning. So I'd be like, I don't want to. I don't want to, like, go back, right? I was scared at that point. And I was like, if this doesn't work this time, I don't know what's going to happen. And that was what really scared me. Because I was like, that night, that alcohol, like, no matter how much I drank there, and I didn't realize this till later on, and I was kind of reflecting. I was like, it wasn't working for me anymore. And I always heard these guys and people sharing in AA of like, alcohol stopped working for me. And I was like, that'll never happen to me. And that happened my last night of drinking. That happened to me. And I was like, well, if that's my solution and my solution isn't going to work for me 100% of the time anymore, and it stopped working for me before that, I just wasn't, that hit me in the face so much that I had to admit it. And I was like, well, what am I going to do now? And I didn't know if the steps were going to work. I had no idea if the steps were going to work for me or not. But I knew what alcohol had done to me at that point and done with my, you know. But it was me. I was in all of it. I was picking up. So I was like, well, what can I do, right? I can't stop on my own. But I was like, but I can do in AA what they've been, you know, trying to help me with and say, you know, hey, let's take these steps. Let's go through this book. Let's do this. Let's show up to these meetings. Let's, you know, get on the phone and talk about this stuff. I would call people with the most outlandish stuff from my home group, my sponsor, guys from my home group, and they would listen to me, and I'd be like, going on, and they'd be like, yeah, man, like, it's going to be okay. I was like, no, I don't think you understand. They're like, I remember, you know, I remember that, you know, they remembered what it was like, you know, and I'm thankful, you know, I'm thankful people who took the time to listen to me, even in my crazy ramblings, my crazy sober ramblings, because, you know, it was important that I have that resource, but, you know, so me and my sponsor, we meet up, and we're starting reading this book. I don't know, and he gives me the sheet that has 1 through 12 step prayers, and he's like, highlights it. He made it real simple for me. He was like, look, he's like, I know, because I told him, I was honest with him. I was like, I don't know. I was like, I know prayers, but I don't really believe in them, or I don't know what they mean. I don't know how they're going to keep me sober. And he was like, look, here's some simple prayers. And he's like, I highlighted the 3rd and 7th step prayers for me. And he's like, just read off these for now. He's like, that's good enough for now. You know, and then he's like, maybe later on you come up with some based on that or some of your own that you might like to save. And he's like, this is okay for now. And I was like, oh, all right. And I was like, well, I can do that, right? It was all about, like, I was like, oh, I can actually do this, you know, right? It was like, because it sometimes seemed overwhelming. And I was like, well, all these steps and they're all, you know, seem so complicated. But he was like, all right, just read these. He's like, you get, and just read them every in the morning and at night and just say the serenity prayer. And he's like, you can do that, right? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And so I would do that. And it took me a while before I came up with that. I think I was very reliant on that paper, just reading off the prayers. And then eventually I was like, you know, I think I can come up with my own words for some of this stuff. And then so I did, but that was probably at least a year. So I was probably reading those prayers off for quite a while. But it worked. It worked. Like, I didn't drink, you know, I would say, and I was like, that wasn't all I was doing, though. Of course, you know, we go through the book. And at this point, I've read the doctor's opinion multiple times. Like I said, I had like four sponsors. They were all reading the book with me. So I knew about the doctor's opinion. Bill's story, I think we had gotten to with most of them. But when we got to the later chapters, like, I don't think I'd ever gotten as far as with any of them as far as we agnostics or anything. I was like, oh, I never made it this far. And it was kind of like exciting in a way. I was like, oh, what's this part? Because I had heard random bits and pieces throughout meetings and big book studies and things like that. But it was like, oh, I'm actually at this point now where I'm like, I haven't been this far before. And also with as far as the chips go, I had never been able to pick up past 2 months. It was like 2 months was like kind of the window. And then it's like after 2 months, it was like, I could never get to that 90 days in 3 months. And so meanwhile, I'm doing all this stuff. I'm showing up to the meetings. I got a home group. I'm showing up to the home group. I got a position of, again, I had a very like basic position of like, getting more coffee, like checking the paper plates and the coffee and stuff like that, that I could get my head around. It wasn't anything like, oh, you're going to be the, the GSR or something. Like, I don't know if I could have. I mean, if I thought it was going to keep me sober and someone had said, hey, you should do this, I would have done it. But I would have probably been real scared and not knowing what I was doing. But that was what they gave me. It was like, right, like, hey, check the coffee and check the supplies in there. I was like, okay, you know. And I felt like I was like, oh, all right, I'm doing something. Like, I don't know how this is helping me stay sober, but I'm doing it, and I don't really care. Like, at that point, I didn't care if I understood it or not, because I spent so much time trying to understand it instead of just taking action. And I was like, maybe it's just time for me to just surrender, give up, and just do, trust that these people know something that I don't about staying sober, and just do it, and just do what's suggested. And so then we get to the inventory and the fourth step, and I'll be honest, I sat on it for a little bit, and then I started to feel a little weird, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. I was like, I don't want to drink, but something's not right. And I was like, oh yeah, I've had this fourth step for like a week or whatever, and I didn't start writing anything down. I was like, and I had heard enough of like, I had been in fourth step meetings, stuff like that, and people were like, oh yeah, I waited on my fourth step for like a month or 2 months or a year, and then I was like, and then I picked up again. I was like, damn, I don't want to pick up. Like, is that what's gonna happen? I was like, and then I sat down and started writing. I was like, you know, all right, I gotta write some stuff down, and I don't, you know, I'm not gonna say it was comprehensive. After my fifth step with my sponsor, I probably was driving home and I thought about three or four things that I forgot to tell him, and I was like, oh no, I'm gonna get struck drunk. You know, this is gonna come down and I'm gonna want to drink right now. And I was like, no, maybe I just better tell him that I forgot some stuff, right? Like, let's not overreact here. And then he's like, okay. He's like, you gonna be at the meeting tomorrow night? And I was like, yeah, man. He's like, just tell me then. He's like, tell me about all the stuff, whatever it is. And then I told him, and we talked about it. And he's like, yeah, you know, you let the grass grow for 20 years. You mow it, you're gonna find some stuff down there, and it's gonna take more than one pass to clear all this stuff up. And he's like, it's gonna keep happening. You know, that's right. That's why we have these steps, like, that's why we have the 10th step, that I continue to take the personal inventory, because I'm always going to have more stuff crop up, you know, right? And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, so I didn't have to get it perfectly right 100% the first time? He's like, no. He's like, nobody does. He's like, I don't think anybody does. He's like, well, he just spoke for himself. He's like, I didn't, you know, hit everything on the first try. He's like, but I was as honest as I could be. And he's like, and so were you. And I was like, oh, okay. All right, fair enough, you know. And so we keep going, and we get to these amends, and I start making some amends, and some people, I'm having to explain what the amends are that I'm making for them. They don't remember, which is very, I don't know if you all have had this happen, it's very awkward when you're trying to explain an amends to somebody and they don't remember what it was. And if I had thought they didn't remember, I probably wouldn't have brought it up, but I was like, oh, they definitely remembered what I did, and then they didn't, and it was a whole thing. But But I made the effort, right? I'm making the honest effort to make things right, to clean up my side of the street, and I'm not trying to go out there trying to hurt anybody. And so, but I had to make my list beforehand, and my sponsor and I go through it, and they're like, all right, well, this person asked that you never speak to them again, so you probably can't make a direct amends to them because they don't want to have anything to do with you or talk to you. And he's like, that's where the living amends comes in. And he's like, but unless that's the case, and that was only the case with like one of them, he's like, these other ones, we got to talk about how you're going to approach these people and make these amends, and how's it going to happen? How's it going to work? And I'm thankful for that, because if it was all up to me, I would have screwed it all up, you know. And he had the experience of like having done it himself, and having, you know, he could kind of guide me along that, and like what would be the best way to. And some of them didn't turn out like I expected. Some of them was like I could talk until I was blue in the face, but until I got back the item that I had stolen from this person and then sold, which is in fact a yearbook. And again, I don't have time for that one, but I can tell you after the meeting if you're interested. If you're in my home group, you will have heard that that story. But until I got that back and made that right by returning what wasn't mine, it was like I could talk all I wanted, and it was like it wasn't gonna really matter to her until I showed that I was serious about it, right? Which I did by actually being able to return this yearbook. So stuff like that starts to happen, right? I don't really understand what's happening, but it's like before I know it, I'm like, the obsession's gone. It's like I don't think about drinking. Man, that used to be all I thought about, right? And I'm like, oh, the steps do work. And I was like, I don't remember when I realized this, but I was like, oh, all right. You know, I was like, great. And then I felt like, I was like, oh, I should kick back and relax and, you know, I'm good now, right? And then, but I remember what my sponsor said. He's like, yeah. He's like, you don't have to pay me. You don't have to do anything like that. But he's like, but just go out and like, once we've been through these steps and the book, he's like, give it back with somebody else. He's like, go out and find the people that are like you were when you first walked in here and try and help them out and do the same thing, you know, because not everybody knows, right? It's like, my experience can be helpful to someone else, and I didn't realize that. I always thought, like, it's always going to have to be something I regret or I'm ashamed of. It's like, if I can be helpful to someone through sharing that, it's like, it doesn't really matter how I feel about it, right? If I can be helpful in sharing something that happened to me, no matter how painful or embarrassing, then it's like, I feel like it's my, I don't know if like, I don't really like the duty or responsibility, but it's like, I feel there's something on my heart, right? As someone who's in AA, to then share that with other people, I think it'd be helpful. So that's what I try to do. And I continue that process today, and I don't have a desire to drink today. I think that is only due to a higher power that I don't totally understand, but has been through all of this to bring me to where I am today. And I don't have to understand everything about that to understand that it's not all about me, but I can be helpful. My experience can be helpful. And I don't usually share about like external stuff because I just don't, but I did want to say that only because of this program, me being sober and having these opportunities as a result of that, that I actually got offered to teach some classes at ODU, the place where I could not graduate until I stopped drinking, and like they were getting ready to boot me out of there. And I was like, now they want me to come. Like, that just shows for me that it's like this program works, because I couldn't have got there on my own. That's for sure. So it's just like, I was just thinking about that, and I was like, and it didn't have a lot to do with me, honestly. Like, I just showed up. I was willing to do the work. Sometimes I'm not willing until I feel some pain, and then I'm willing again, and then I start back up again. But I can't ever say that this program doesn't work, the steps don't work. I know that they do for me, and I've seen them work for other people. And so I think I'll call it there. Thank you for having me out.